Welcome all to the special seminar on the lessons from nature, which is actually an excerpt from a book called The Life of the Bhagavata. For those who are here for the first time for the Bhakti Yoga Club program, I'd like to speak a few words about the Bhakti Yoga Club. The Bhakti Yoga Club at SMU is a chartered student organization on campus. We have been here for close to 3 years now. We basically study the principles of philosophy. We try to study the essential truths as given in the ancient Vedic literature, some of which are like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And towards that effect, we have several programs. We conduct several seminars. Sometimes we conduct vegetarian cooking classes. We have had several programs in the past. For the spring semester, we are having this special seminar here. And apart from it, we're also having some other programs in the following weeks. If we meet every Thursday, today is an exception. For a simple reason, if we had the program tomorrow on Valentine's Day, we might not be getting that much of a crowd. So, usually we meet on Thursday evenings in the adjacent building. It's called the Jenkins Hall building at room 101. And some of the topics for the future include, especially for next week, it is wither, love, dating, marriage, spirituality. We try to explore love, the spiritual perspective of love in that lecture. We'll try to do that. We're also having special lectures on going green, the spiritual perspective on environment, qualities of highly elevated souls, and saints and saintly lives. Today we are fortunate to have one such saint with us, His Holiness Harmat Prashak Swami Maharaj. He is a disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, also known as the Hare Krishna movement. His Holiness graduated with degrees in philosophy and with minoring in electrical engineering from University of California at Berkeley. And subsequently, he got in touch with the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and he joined the movement. And he's been an itinerant monk for the past 30 plus years. He lectures widely in various places, especially in the Latin American world. And he's also a visiting professor in one of the universities, which I couldn't get it correctly, the Ricardo
Palmar
University.
Palma.
At Lima in Peru. So, without taking too much of your time, I'd now like to invite His Holiness Harmat Prashak Swami Maharaj. And if you have questions, and if you want to know how to address him, you can call him as Maharaj, which means, literally it means king in Sanskrit, or an emperor, but actually in this context it means one who has controlled his senses, or one who has conquered his senses. So please welcome His Holiness Harmat Prashak Swami Maharaj.
So, my glories have been greatly exaggerated, but you can hire him for $15 a week. I have to pay $30. So I grew up in California. I was born on Guam, grew up in California, and then I graduated in psychology, philosophy, with minor studies in biology and electrical engineering, University of California. And I got a first place prize. Then I started a doctorate program in Northwestern in Chicago. But I was really thinking by then, you know, I'd been through physics, biology, psychology, that, you know, Western knowledge is really limited. So my mentor was president of the American Psychological Association, Donald Campbell, really great person. So he agreed. So he said, why don't you try out the Orient? You know. So I, you know, left the PhD program and I got a black belt in Okinawan karate. And then I came in contact with our tradition, which is a Bengali tradition. And they're very satisfied, very profound. And after that, we were doing different things. We were working, for example, with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is our science program. We worked with Charlestown, who invented the laser. Other Nobel laureates, and very nice programs. And then, like Sri Ram was saying, since about 10 years, we've been our own private programs in South America. And now we have a group called the
North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies.
North American, NIOS, N-I-O-S. Our webpage is Bhati, B-H-A-T-I, means light, .org, and Bhati.org. And it's new. And so we had a contract with San Marcos University, which is also SMU, if you think about it. San Marcos University in Peru. But that was the oldest, that's the oldest university in the Western world. And we were doing different programs on, you know, Indian culture and traditional culture for 3 years. And this last year, the whole thing was called Light of the Bhagavat, you know, Cultivation of the Human Spirit. And it was centered around a book, again, that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, our founder, produced. Actually, a whole symposium. And he was invited in 1961 to attend a congress in Japan on cultivation of the human spirit. Like that. So he thought, okay, that India has wonderful contribution. So he took one chapter from the 18,000 verse Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. And it's a very, very beautiful chapter about pantheism. Because if you know Oriental culture, they're very faithful, very, what's the word, they look very animated, you know, by pantheistic descriptions of nature. The beautiful plum blossoms and the willow branches, and you know, so they appreciate cultural higher aspects through pantheism. So this chapter is all about that. The poet Sukadeva Goswami is giving different lessons from nature, and so Prabhupada A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, his idea was that somebody should paint like paintings. Each verse is 48 verses in the chapter. And then, you know, his explanations, which were about... So this is actually an edition of the book from India, which just has the texts like that. And we're publishing a copy. Oh, you have your copy? Yeah. It's here? Oh, it's in my bag. Yeah. So we're publishing a copy of the book, which has... Okay. Yeah. There's the original plates, full color, 8.5 by 11, in Spanish and English. It's been in other editions before, but it's out of print right now, which is fortunate because we can do it full size like this. And we're almost ready. It's going to be regular full hardbound book, but we're, you know, this is kind of an advanced copy like that. So there's 48 pictures altogether, and this we did this in Lima, in Peru. And then the art exhibition was there in the municipal gallery. And the mayor came, and there was a big gala event with drinks and, we'll call it non-alcoholic drinks, and movie stars. Very, very nice, you know, inauguration. Then newspapers were coming, children were coming for the exhibition. Then we had different pre-events based upon different themes in the book. National Education University, Ambassador of India, National Science Council. And down there in Peru, people are much more, you know, open-minded, you know, about the different ideas. So it's a very, very good thing. And now we're traveling in the U.S. We made presentations in Boise, Idaho, San Francisco, Mexico, Houston. And we're trying to cultivate this idea that here's a very, very wonderful way for people to appreciate the contribution of this Vedic culture. Because it's something very, very nice. Professor George Hart, he's from the University of California, Berkeley, Department of South Asian Studies. And he wrote a book called A Rapid Sanskrit Method, which is how to learn Sanskrit, how to get started. And in the preface, he says, well, why learn Sanskrit? You know, why not Spanish or, you know, German, Portuguese? So he points out that Sanskrit is an enormous carrier of classical culture. The British tried to cover all this, you know. But there's architecture, mathematics, astrology, astronomy, medicine, music and fine arts, and profound knowledge. If you look at an encyclopedia of world music, when you come to Indian music, they'll say things like, you know, Indians have developed, you know, rhythm and melody to such an extent undreamed of in Western culture. But everything is like that, profound knowledge. And he says that the current bibliography, that Indologists maintain of all these ancient Sanskrit works is called the Catalogus Catalogorum. You may have one here, SMU. It lists over 160,000 ancient Sanskrit texts in all these areas. And he says, among the greatest poets in the world, among the greatest grammarians, and he says, out of all of these, the Bhagavad Purana, which is the book we're talking about here, he said, it's the greatest work of devotion ever written
only being equaled, in my opinion, by a few other works in the Sanskrit language like that. So it's an incredible text. So here's the opportunity to get a little idea of the quality of this thing like that. So we have a whole PowerPoint show we do and everything else, but there's not time enough for that today. And so we have these very beautiful paintings on exhibit. We had pre-events in different areas. And then finally we finished off with a big event with a formal dinner, a big hotel, people in tuxedos, and you know, our group, our children's school did a real wonderful presentation. And we finished off with a very nice movie, which was done by one director, Oscar Natters, and his wife Anna. And they're real avant-garde people there and really into their folk culture. They were visiting professors in Mexico, India, like that. So he said, yeah, I'd like to do this. You know, so he took up the book, and he then extracted out of it and tried to really catch the essence, and especially from a Peruvian perspective, which is very good because Peru and Japan are very similar. You know Fujimura? Yeah, he's a Chinese guy, a Japanese guy, but he was president of Peru, you know, because it's like very oriental atmosphere. So we're going to maybe look at some of the paintings here real quickly, and then we can look at the movie like that. Yeah. So any questions at this point? Okay, so this is the first one here. We have our human weasel. Easel. Upside down. There you go. Yeah, turn it. No, side. It's vertical. That's no other way.
Yes, sir.
No, other way.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that way. Yeah. So the poet is talking about the rainy season. There's the dry season, people are suffering, you know. And then finally the rains come, and we have all this seasonal growth. Very beautiful flowers blossom, very nice butterflies come out, and the whole thing is so wonderful. So he compares this to a young, newly married couple. They start to discover that when they work together as a team, you know, a man and a woman, they have all kinds of potency together, kind of like Richard and Pat Nixon. They discover when they started, But the whole thing is a temporary affair, right? And the feminine beauty fades, the masculine intelligence goes, and then the butterflies disappear, the flowers disappear, you know. So he's saying, don't be intoxicated by this youthful beauty and power. It's a temporary affair like that. And all you're left with after about 15 years is enormous credit card debts, right? Yeah. And all your beautiful furniture and everything else, you're struggling. So that's the first lesson, is realize that all this material enjoyment, opulence, this is a temporary thing. And strive for eternal values, right? Use your youth and beauty and intelligence to strive for eternal values. Okay. You put those over here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you want, do you want to go up there? Yeah. Harley is an architect. Okay. So this one says that the very little light then. The first one. There you go. Okay. This one says that when there's a good rainfall, the little humble, simple village people are very happy because now their crops flourish and there's so much things like that. And they haven't got to take loans from the evil capitalist. Now, not all capitalists are evil. We get money from Bill Gates, so but he's an evil capitalist. Confused guy. Because when the rains aren't good, the farmers have to take loans, right? And he charges them high interest rate and they're struggling and he can maintain his beautiful silk curtains, his nice furniture, silk robes, flatterers, you know. And so he's depressed when there's good rainfall. So we see nice rainfall, and then there's different people that have different reactions. So a lot of the light of the Bhagavad and a lot of our whole literature is very, very sophisticated, very, very advanced political science. Something which is practically speaking unknown in the West. India is still first world country in social relations, you know. The population density of India is about 6 times that of Texas. You know, try and feed, clothe, house, engage 6 times as many people, Mr. Governor. Yeah, like that. But they do it quite well, actually, considering everything like that. And so this is all social philosophy, Varnashram system, how the capitalist should relate to the laborers, how the government should relate to the capitalist, how men and women should relate. You know, next one like that. Let me put it on top of this one here. Oh, yeah, okay. And so we have different classes of people, intellectuals, right here. administrators, kings, merchants, and artisans, laborers. But also the human life, we should go through different phases in our life. 25 years, you should be a student. And not just technical education, really aiming towards character development, you know, learning how to be, control yourself. Then, okay, 25 years, you get married, you have your family, you have the four-bedroom house, you're running for the congressman or what do you call it, city council. Oh, there's a competition. Get in the car by, you know, by 7 o'clock in the morning to get out there. But okay, don't die that way. By the time you're about 50, let the kids, you know, take charge of things and sell the big house so they can't come home anymore. Start their own life. You know? And get a smaller house and go traveling to, you know, places of scenic beauty. And then finally, husband and wife separate in the strict Vedic culture, and she becomes a civil widow, and he becomes a civil dead man. And legally, they sign documents that he has no more obligations like that. And by gradual development, cultivation of the human spirit, they're ready. She goes back and she's very, very important in the family. The idea of mother in Indian family is more mother. I'm sorry, the idea of a lady in Indian family is more of mother rather than wife. Right? My spiritual told me this. In Vedic culture, a boy, a child, girl, whatever, they should be allowed to nurse, breastfeed, until I think it's 2 years old, if they want to. At that point, you just say enough, you know. So, I don't know, many Indian boys remember sitting with their mother's lap, you know, taking milk from her. So the view of women is different than our West. And the Western view of women is how to exploit them for gross gratification. But many times in India, there's a strong relationship like that. You know? So you see many Indian movies with all the women crying. It's almost like every Indian movie with women crying. And like that. So much more civilized. You know? So here we have this sannyasi. And he's in the last order of life. He just has his little called danda, and his cup for begging, and his robe. I'm actually a sannyasi too. I have three outfits like this. And when I'm in India, I don't even wear a shirt. You know, and I just go, and I just take whatever food comes, and I spend all my time preaching, introspective life like that. And in a very advanced stage, then you're ready to die. You're already off. You're already detached from your body. You're already cultivating the human spirit. So this is a more Taoist monk. Is the Chinese art, but it's everywhere. Every culture has this conception of just, you know, getting ready to die. You know, don't do it all at once. Renounce, become detached, and cultivate the spirit. Right now we're like this, our body's like this. But as we become more advanced, it becomes the whole spiritual, psychological world opens up. You can read people's minds, you can see the past and future, and then finally you can see the spiritual life. Okay. And what is spiritual life? You finally leave everything, become, you know, a void or disappear. Some people say you become one with a Brahman or, you know, whatever. But this is the Vedic culture that is full of variegatedness. So when Krishna came into Vrindavan in the this time, after the rainy season, everything's very nice, very beautiful. Some of his friends and the cows, they enjoyed the beautiful forests. They were blackberries and dates and bananas, and they would play every day and take care of the cows. So this is God. You know, God doesn't want to be an old guy with a beard with arthritis. You know, God wants to be, you know, 9 years old playing with his friends, right? Just all every day. And your mother gives you a nice lunch, and you go, yeah. He's a supreme enjoyer. You know, God give me this, God give me that. Oh, okay. But no, you got to give it all to God. Just wondering there. So Krishna has his friends, he has his cows, he has his forest, and they're bringing things, and it's unlimited exchanges of love and affection like that. That last picture. Who was it, Norman Mailer? He said, my grandmother told me that in this life, the things that we give and receive at Christmas, are tokens of love. But in the kingdom of God, we give and receive love itself. So this is the idea. It's some place worth going. Mark Twain said everybody's idea of heaven in the West is a place where everybody goes and plays musical instruments. And he said in America, half the guys can't play anything decent anyway. So it sounds kind of like hell. You just sit there and play this stuff and sing about God. So he said, therefore, the devil's work becomes quite easy, you know, to convince everybody to enjoy this world. But it's not like that. You know. This is Krishna. This is Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. So Rama is the Logos. In Jesus, or Western Christian tradition, we appreciate this as Jehovah, the beloved of Mary, and Christ, right, the Logos, who allows us to connect to God. Guru, same conception. Because God is too great. You know, God is like the sun. And to approach the sun, you have to have something to, you know, intermediate. When there's water in the pond, the sun is the friend of the lotus flower. Very nice. But when there's no water in the lake, then the sun becomes too strong and the lotus dies. So we're like the lotus flower, right? And the water is like Guru, like Christ, like Rama. And without that, it's just God is just too powerful. So we need something. St. Francis said the same thing. Very beautiful poems like that. How we had to follow the principles of religion, otherwise, you know, we just couldn't deal with God, you know, that in his pure form. So this is some of the art. There's 48 pictures. And this is a very, very profound culture. I think you're in your Bhakti Yoga club. You're, you know, gradually, that's the idea of just appreciating these things like that. You know? So any questions? Comments? Maybe one question. Why do you cut your hair that way? What's that? Anybody here been to India? He's gone to India. Okay. You gone to India? Yeah? How was it? How was India?
Wonderful.
Yeah?
Totally different experience.
That's a fact, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you have like world, you know, kids have like world history. That basically means American history and European history, a little bit about South America. And Asia is one chapter for everything. But, kind of speaking, Asian history is richer, you know, than American history. It's longer, so much variety, like that. There's a joke in Spanish. What do you call somebody who speaks three languages?
Trilingüe.
Eh?
Oh, trilingüe.
Yeah. What do you, ¿cómo se llama alguien que habla un idioma? Dos idiomas.
Bilingüe.
¿Cómo se llama alguien que habla un idioma?
North American.
We're very provincial. In some ways it's nice. We're very simple here. You know, people like that. But other ways, no, there's a big world with so much to offer. In Europe, if you want mechanics, which country do you go to? Machines. If you want love, which country do you go to?
France.
If you want good food?
Italy.
Yeah. If you want best police system in the world.
Switzerland.
Yeah, British. Yeah, they say that Swiss is the courts, justice system. The British police are always famous for, you know, settlement. In the European hell, the British are the cooks, the Swiss are the lovers, the Germans are the police, the Italians are the judges, and the French, the maker of Citroën, are the mechanics. But there's only one country in the Encyclopedia Britannica, only one country where it says the philosophy of India. Yeah, the culture, the history of Germany, the literature of Germany, Japan, Russia. But only country in the world, in the whole thing where it says the philosophy of, not Germany, not US, India. And it's not even within the section on India, it's a whole separate entry. Because India is the land of philosophy and culture. Prabhupada says, you only take birth in India if you were looking for law for philosophy in your last lifetime. There's somebody there who was looking for philosophy in her last lifetime. Now she's an engineer. Yeah. So everybody has their nature. I mean, you find out what your nature is, find out what your heritage is, and then contribute. Yeah, every country should contribute. Because we need, you know, all the help we can get now to solve the problems. Everybody knows we're living pretty good. And most people aren't living like this. The movie, he really gets into this. Okay, maybe afterwards, any more questions, we can talk like that. But now we're going to try and see our movie.
So now can I request our control room to turn off the front lights?
Okay, that's good enough. Okay, so now I'm going to try and push the play button, and I'll see you again in 35 minutes. I'm going to read this. So there's no, it's not talking. Play.